Oh, okay. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to my session. The door is closed. There's no way back now. So you have to stay here for 75 minutes to listen to my session. Get moving with your mailbox. The agenda for today. I'll have a brief introduction. I'm going to talk about what happens if you have Exchange 2003. Who is running Exchange 2003 here? Only a few. In New Orleans, Exchange 2003 was the last topic. So everybody was attending and they were interested, and then I switched to, okay, Exchange 2003, and everybody left. So they said, nah, you move Exchange 2003 to the beginning of the session and then people will stay, hopefully. But we're going to talk about it because, yeah, there still is some demand. We're going to talk about Outlook Anywhere. Why you want to do Outlook Anywhere. We're going to talk about the mailbox replication service, the service responsible for moving mailboxes between Exchange 2007, 2010, and 2013. We're going to talk about modern public folders. We're going to talk about Edge Transport Server, and the last one I added yesterday was TMG. It's only one slide. I was at the Ask the Experts area last Tuesday, and the first guy came to me and he had a question: how about TMG? We all know TMG, yeah, it's no longer sold, but it's still supported. So a quick talk on that. My name is Jaap Wesselius. I'm a system architect at AMSIO, which is a managed hosting provider in the Netherlands. And yeah, as some of you have noticed, I'm no longer an independent consultant, which I have been for 7 years. I'm now a regular employee, but I did some good negotiations, so I still got the same freedom as I used to have. I'm an Exchange Server MVP for 7 years now. I've written a book, Exchange Server 2010, A Practical Approach. And like some other MVPs, I'm working on an Exchange 2013 book. I'm a frequent blogger. I'm a frequent speaker on major events like TechEd, the Exchange Conference, the Quest Conference. I'm going to be at the Connections in Las Vegas next October. So I do some speaking at the bigger events. Exchange Server 2013 CU1. Cumulative Update 1. This is the latest version. Was released almost 3 months ago, and it supports coexistence, which means you can install Exchange 2013 into an existing 2007 or 2010 environment. When you do, it's called transition from 2007 to 2013 or 2010 to 2013. You integrate your new Exchange server into the existing environment and move all the resources gradually over to the new server. Exchange 2010 is relatively easy. Exchange 2007 is more a bumpy road to move to 2013, but it's still doable. I see some complaints on news groups and forums about, yeah, issues that arise, but they are solvable. When you're running Exchange 2003, yeah, it's not supported in a coexistence environment, so you have to build a new Active Directory, and you have to create a new Exchange environment and move all the resources. The supported Outlook clients are Outlook 2007 and higher. You have to install the latest service packs or hot fixes for Outlook to work with Exchange 2013. And important to note that Outlook 2003 is no longer supported. It's not even supported. It won't work with Exchange 2013. So when people come to me and say, okay, I want to move to Exchange 2013, my first question is, do you have Outlook 2003? And there are still major companies who are running this Outlook version, and they have to move first. Otherwise, they cannot migrate to Exchange 2013. So what's new in Exchange 2013? And more, what is relevant when migrating to Exchange 2013? In Exchange 2007 and Exchange 2010, we have 5 different server roles, 5 separate server roles. We have the client access server, hub transport, mailbox server, unified messaging, and edge transport server. This is no longer the case in Exchange 2013. We only have 2 flavors of servers. We have the client access server, also known as or referred to as the front-end server, and we have a mailbox server running in the background. That's all we have. The mailbox.
The transport role, is it coming back in Service Pack 1?
Even if I knew, I was not allowed to tell. I don't know. They when Exchange was released, they said, okay, there's no Edge Transport Server 2013, but it was time constrained, so to me that means wait for another year and then surprise, it's back. I haven't heard a single word about Edge 2013. So that's gone. The mailbox server role. The hub transport server role is transferred to a transport service on the mailbox server. The unified messaging server role is also integrated on the mailbox server as a service, a unified messaging server. So every mailbox server that you deploy automatically has the hub transport service and the unified messaging service installed. The client access server only does authentication. So all clients enter the client access server are authenticated and the request is redirected to the correct mailbox server. And in this scenario, SMTP is also a client. So mail comes from the internet to your client access server and is then redirected to the mailbox server or the transport service on the mailbox. Important, Outlook Anywhere will be the default protocol for Outlook clients to communicate with the Exchange servers. And in this perspective, the death of RPC over TCP, or the traditional MAPI. The traditional MAPI will no longer work. All clients are going to use Outlook Anywhere, which means that if you have an Outlook client, and it's connecting, it's using MAPI to connect directly to the mailbox server, or to the CAS array in 2010, when you move the mailbox to 2013, AutoDiscover will, or Outlook client will use AutoDiscover to find out about the new location, and it will automatically reconfigure to use Outlook Anywhere, so RPC over HTTPS. Also new in Exchange 2013 is the modern public folders. Modern public folders, the traditional public folders as we know it, have been decommissioned. They have been trying to move us off public folders the last 6 years. But now they have recreated public folders, rebranded it to the modern public folders, and it's running on the mailbox server as separate mailboxes. System folders are no longer available. And system folders, which is the free busy information and the offline address book, were used by Outlook 2003 and older clients. So since these are no longer available, Outlook clients, Outlook 2003 clients, will not be able to connect to Exchange 2013. And the Edge Transport Server. As this gentleman already said, there is no Edge Transport Server in Exchange 2013.
What happened with the forms library?
The question is, what happens to the forms library? Now, every now and then this question pops up. I have no idea.
Okay.
I'm sorry. If you send me an email, I will try to find out.
Okay.
Nothing happened. Is that, huh?
Still works.
Okay. And the Edge Transport Server, yeah, no longer available as a separate Exchange 2013 role. I don't know if it will be coming back. Maybe, maybe not. But the good news is that the existing Exchange 2010 or 2007 Edge Transport Server role worked perfectly with Exchange 2013. But we'll get back to that later on. So if you're running Exchange 2003, There is no direct transition path from Exchange 2003 to Exchange 2013. So you have to figure out a solution. There are two options. Option one is to move or transition from Exchange 2003 to Exchange 2010. You can integrate Exchange 2010 into the existing environment, move all the resources to Exchange 2010, decommission Exchange 2010, and then integrate Exchange 2013. The second option is to do a migration, an inter-org migration, from Exchange 2003 to Exchange 2013 directly. But you have to create a separate Active Directory, separate Exchange installation, and move all the resources. You can move everything, users, groups, resource, computer, servers, application, everything, or you can decide to create a resource forest. And a resource forest in Exchange is a fully supported scenario where you create an additional forest with only Exchange and the mailboxes in there and use linked mailboxes to the users in the existing Active Directory. This is, from an Exchange point of view, a fully supported scenario. So the steps in the first option is that, yeah, you have to prepare Active Directory, install Exchange 2010 Service Pack 3, configure the namespaces, the coexistence, like the webmail contoso.com, autodiscover, and legacy namespace, then move all the resources to Exchange 2013 or 2010, mailboxes, public folders, and everything. Implement Outlook Anywhere, restructure or centralize public folders, and then decommission Exchange 2003. Then you continue, do the same steps, move everything to Exchange 2013. That's quite a lot of work, but it's a normal, fully supported scenario. And the second one is to build a new Active Directory. And you have to use ADMT, Active Directory Migration Toolkit, to move all the users to the new Active Directory. You can also use Vim, for example, or DirSync. Then you have to use the new move request to move all the resources over. But when you do this, you still need additional tools, but not migrated groups. Groups are migrated from an Active Directory perspective, but not from Exchange. Contacts, public folders, email address book, everything. Separate attributes, you have to think about that. That's quite a lot of work. So you move all the users, all the mailboxes are migrated, but the users are still in the original Active Directory. And Exchange 2013 at this point is a resource forest. Then you can decide, okay, am I going to move all other resources as well, or am I going to continue as a resource forest? So if you still have 2003 and you want to move to 2013, there's quite a lot of work ahead. An important aspect in Exchange 2013 is Outlook Anywhere, since Outlook Anywhere is the default protocol. RPC over TCP, or traditional MAPI, is discontinued. I know there are quite a lot of companies here in the Netherlands, maybe in the rest of Europe as well, that don't want to implement Outlook Anywhere out of security reasons or whatever. But at this point, you no longer have the choice. It will be the default protocol. Outlook clients will connect to the Exchange 2013 client access server. They will authenticate, and the request will be forwarded, proxied to Exchange 2013 mailbox server, if you have your mailbox on 2013. If you have Exchange 2007 or Exchange 2010, you still hit the 2013 server, but your request is proxied to the down-level client access server. And the client access server, the down-level client access server, gets the data from the appropriate mailbox server. Split DNS is recommended. Microsoft started to recommend split DNS some time ago, and the recommendation is getting stronger and stronger. Brian Day, who is a support engineer, senior support engineer, something in Microsoft, wrote a great article about split DNS and all the various scenarios that come up on this particular subject. But when you use split DNS, you use, for example, webmail.contoso.com. And that's the only namespace you use. You use it internally and you use it externally. So externally, it resolves to 172.168, whatever IP address. And internally, the same URL is used, or FQDN. But it resolves to 10.10.10.38, for example, or 192, some internal IP address. And if you have multiple client access servers, you have a virtual IP or a VIP on your load balancer, but it will resolve this particular IP address. AutoDiscover in Exchange 2013. AutoDiscover was first introduced in Exchange 2007 and Outlook 2007. And it's the primary means for Outlook clients to discover information from the Exchange environment to configure themselves. So they get the information from the client access server through the Outlook provider. They get all the information back, create the Outlook profile, and configure themselves. They not only do that once during initial installation, but Outlook clients do an auto-discover check once every hour. So it's a continuous process for discovering the Exchange environment and maybe to see if things have changed. Internal clients use the service connection point. A service connection point is a special object in Active Directory, and each client access server has its own service connection point. So if you have 10 cache servers, you also have 10 service connection points. And in the service connection point, the configuration used for AutoDiscover is stored. Outlook automatically does a lookup in Active Directory for this service connection point, get the information, go to the client access server, performs an HTTP POST command, which is sent down to Active Directory. It gets the information back and configures itself. External clients, so a domain client on the internet, or an internal client, but that's not domain joined, cannot retrieve the info from the service connection point. And they will automatically fall back to the FQDN autodiscover.contoso.com. That's default built in the product. And the contoso.com domain name is retrieved from the primary email address. So if my primary email address, for example, is Vesalius.info, it will automatically start looking for autodiscover.vesalius.info. And that happens for all clients. That's built into the product, and there's no way around it. If this is not available, it will try other steps, like an autodiscover redirect, or maybe some service records to find the information. But from that point on, when it's able to access the autodiscover server, it again does the HTTP POST command to the client access server down into the organization. An XML package is sent to the client or to the Outlook client, and the Outlook client will configure itself. Now, why is this extremely important? Because of certificates. When you install an Exchange cache server, a self-signed certificate is automatically installed. Now, a self-signed certificate is nice for testing purposes, for testing OAuth. But AutoDiscover will not work using this self-signed certificate. You can import this self-signed certificate into the store of your Outlook client, and then magically it will work. But that's not the way you want to go. There are actually customers who do this, who create a GPO and import the self-signed certificate into each Outlook client. It will work, no problem. It saved them $250 for a first-class certificate. But when you have a mobile phone, for example, or an iPad, you want to do Active Sync, you have to install this self-signed certificate onto the device. So it will take you 15 minutes for every device to configure. And if you have 200 devices, it will take you 3 days just to save $250 for a certificate. So you have to use third-party, normally supported certificates for AutoDiscover. Before implementing Exchange 2013, try to use split or try to implement a split DNS scenario. Use one namespace. There are some changes in Exchange 2013, in Outlook 2013, where Exchange make a distinct difference between the internal network and the external network. So when they do an auto discover request, they get more and more information returned. They get an XML package containing information from about the internal network and the external network. If you have one namespace for both, it will speed up the process. Enable Outlook Anywhere. It's not a prerequisite or requirement. You can wait with Outlook Anywhere until you move to Exchange 2013. But it's a strong recommendation to do it earlier, to start working with it in Exchange 2010 or 2007. It simplifies the network path. Only 443 needs to be open. Internal and external access are identical. That's an important one. And if you are moving to Exchange 2013, if you move your mailbox to 2013, but you still have public folder database on Exchange 2010 or 2007, you need Outlook Anywhere to connect to the client access server and then proxy the request to the down-level server. So if you don't implement this, you might run into issues with the public folders. Related sessions on this are the 2013 Client Access Server role by Nathan Jones, no Nathan Winter, and the on-premises upgrade and coexistence session, which was done by Ilse van Kriekeningen yesterday. Both sessions already have been done, but they will be available somewhere later this week online. So now comes the tricky part. The most tricky part is that my laptop has shut down. I'm wondering why, because it should be powered. I think my VPN connection is lost somehow. This is the part you're always afraid of. Now, let's see. There we are again. Now my demo is based on Exchange 2007. All demos you see here during TechEd are based on Exchange 2010. Because Exchange 2010 and Exchange 2013 nicely interact together. So this is more what separates the men from the boys. But I regretted this yesterday during my preparation. But we'll see. I have Outlook 2010 here connecting to an Exchange 2007 mailbox server. So when I go to my mailbox server, I can see only the system attendant. Let's start again. Okay, it's connected. I can see the administrator connecting to the server. I can see the client version. I can see the IP address of the originating client. In this case, it's .44, which is my Outlook client. XMON is your friend in situations like this because you can track which clients are connected to your server. You can see what client versions are used, and you can also see which clients use the most resources on your Exchange server. And when I go to here, I do okay, right mouse click. No, not show the desktop. I say connection status, and I get this dialog box. I can see my SMTP address. I can see a proxy server. I'm using Direct Mappy right now, so I'm not using Outlook anywhere, so no proxy server is used at all. I can see the Active Directory, the domain controller. I can see the mailboxes. And here I can see TCP IP is being used as the connection protocol. Now, when I go to the client access server, I have my cache server here. Now, when it's not enabled, it says Outlook Anywhere enabled false, of course. Come. Ah, there it is. If it's enabled, disabled, you see in the action pane an option enable Outlook Anywhere. Right now it says disable Outlook Anywhere. But when you do, you have to enter the external host name. You have to set the client's authentication method. Then it takes another 15 to 20 minutes before it's actually activated. So I activated this yesterday just to speed up the process. You can use, you have to set the proxy server here, which in my case is webmail.inframan.nl. And I have a certificate containing these names, including the auto-discover name on the client access server. If you have Exchange 2010, you can use a wildcard certificate, but you have to configure the Outlook provider. There are a couple of Outlook providers. They are not configured at this moment. There's an Outlook provider not being used, the web one. And there's an Outlook provider for MAPI connected clients and for Outlook Anywhere connected clients, which is the EXPR version. And when I say min EXPR format list, I get all the information. If I use a wildcard certificate, I can enter in the certificate entry msstd.ms:*.contoso.com. And that's the value you see in the Outlook profile. And you can configure the proxy server here. But since I'm not using a wildcard certificate, I don't have to. So I can go to the profile, account settings. It was still enabled from yesterday. Configure this one. Now, I do this manually, but normally you use a GPO for this. But remember, there are separate template files for Outlook 2007, 2010, or 2013. So you have to import these first. Okay. Now wait for a couple of seconds. There are no more Outlook processes running. No more additional pop-up. And now you see webmail.informan.nl, which is my proxy server in the connection status, so I know my Outlook client is using HTTPS to connect to the client access server, the Exchange 2007 client access server. There it is truncated, and then it's connecting to the mailbox server. And when I go here, I see, okay, HTTPS. There still is one TCP IP, which is for the connection between the Outlook client and the domain controller. And in Exchange 2010, they have something called directory in the middle, next to MAPI in the middle, where you use HTTPS to connect to the cache server, and from the cache server it connects to the domain controller. So you don't see that entry there. Now, when you move to Exchange 2013, in this scenario, your clients will still use the same name, but they will connect to the Exchange 2013 cache server. It will authenticate and it will proxy the request or proxy the request to the 2007 server. Now, if you have seen the client access server presentation yesterday, maybe you have noticed that the down-level cache server has to be changed from basic to NTLM authentication. Now, it takes some time for this setting to be effective, but to speed up this process, I'm going to reboot my machine. I'm going to change my IP addresses. Here as well. Now this one, I can go to the client access server. Now when I do it here, localhost/ECP. And I enter my administrator credentials, you will get this. So you are expecting the admin console, but instead you get a 403 error. This is caused because your mailbox is still on Exchange 2007. And the admin console doesn't know it's there. And yeah, there is no ECP page there, so it will fail. So what you can do is add an option. ECP/Exchange client version is 15. And if you do, the client knows, okay, my mailbox is still on down level, but I have to show the admin console. I can go to the server, I can do, can check the virtual directories. I can configure the external domain name on the client access server, but this is only the external domain name. If you want to configure the internal domain name for the internal URL, you have to use PowerShell to do this. Here are the certificates. Now I'm using on the mailbox, no, on the client access server. I'm using a normal digitized certificate. Don't cost you much. It's supported by 99.9% of all clients, normal clients, mobile clients. So this should be working now. Now let's see. If my legacy does, if my 2007 server is already up and running. I think it's running, but it still has to initialize the OWA application. These are the longest minutes of your life. If you're standing here and waiting. Yeah. No. What I did here, I have my webmail URL, which is now pointing to Exchange 2013. But in a coexistence scenario with 2013 and 2007, an OR request is not proxied to the cache server, but the request is redirected. So OWA initially, or the client initially connects to webmail.contoso.com, and after authentication it sees, okay, this mailbox is still on 2007, and it's redirected. And it's using a separate URL for this. And yes. But this is working. This is only OWA, just to see if the server is up and running. Nothing else. But for Outlook Anywhere, it connects to the new server, and the request is still proxied to the old server. And there is no difference if you're using Exchange 2007 or Exchange 2010 when it comes to Outlook Anywhere. So it's up and running. Yep, log off. Now I go back to my client. I am my client. Wait, this is one. Now I haven't changed anything yet on the Outlook profile, so it's still going to connect to webmail.inframan.nl, but yeah, this now resolves to Exchange 2013. Now let's see. I was already afraid this would going to happen. Crap. No. That's a good thinking. Nah. Now, just to make sure. Change it back here. Okay, this one is still active, configured. Okay. Now, fingers crossed. So now it's from an Outlook, from a client perspective, nothing has changed. But when you look at the mailbox server, especially here, you will see that the administrator is still connected, but you see the IP address has changed from .44 to .187, which in fact is my Exchange 2013 client access server. So it's now the client access server actually connecting to the mailbox server. So it's not a big deal, it's no rocket science to implement Outlook Anywhere, but if you have a larger environment, you have to plan this securely. The next part we're going to talk about is the mailbox replication service. And the mailbox replication service is the service responsible for moving mailbox data from one database to another database. This can be on the same server, it can also be a different server or a different version. In the early days, we used the move mailbox command. And the move mailbox command was an offline movement of mailbox data. So you opened the Exchange Management Shell, entered move mailbox identity, administrator, new mailbox, whatever. And then the mailbox was moved to the other server. But it was a synchronous mechanism. It was running on this particular server where you had the shell opened. If you kill the shell, close it, the move request was killed as well. So if you are running overnight using some PowerShell script, moving separate mailboxes using RDP, you go to sleep, and after 1 hour somebody says, I have an open connection, kill it, or maybe you have some GPO do that for you, the session is killed, the move mailbox is killed, and your data is not migrated. Also, the dumpster was not migrated, and if you have a cross-forest migration, you need access to the other Active Directory and the mailbox server. In Exchange 2010, a new mechanism was introduced, the online mailbox move. And the same works in Exchange 2013. It's an online move of mailbox data. It's an asynchronous mechanism. You use the shell to initiate a move request. And the data is moved in the background. So you can initiate the request. The data will be moved. You can log off, you can go home, whatever. In Exchange 2010, the mailbox data is also indexed during the move. So during the actual move, all mailbox content is indexed. And the mailbox replication service is running on the client access server. The mailbox replication server, or the MRS, is running on all client access servers. So if you have 6 cache servers, you have 6 MRS instances waiting for new requests. You have this new move request, min identity, administrator, target database. And if you do though, the move request is initiated. A special message is placed into the system mailbox. And at that point, the status is set to queued. So if you do get move request, and you see, okay, status queued, it's still there waiting for a MRS to be picked up. And the MRS checks periodically for these particular system messages. If it sees, it will pick it up randomly. So you, if you have these 6 servers again, you never know which one will pick up the move request unless you specify a particular client access server. And if it's picked up, it says the status is changed to in progress, and it will start moving messages. It will create a snapshot at this moment. And from this snapshot, it will start moving mailbox data to the other server or the other mailbox database. Clients still connect to this old mailbox. If 95% of all mailbox information is moved, it's set to completion and progress. At that point, the old mailbox is closed, and the users are no longer able to send any messages to work with this particular mailbox. And the remaining information, maybe some new information that entered during after the snapshot was made, is moved over. The changes are made in Active Directory, and the user gets this pop-up message saying, "From the administrator has made significant changes. Please restart Outlook." So you restart Outlook, and then it will reconfigure itself. There is an option, minus suspend when ready to complete. It will move all the mailboxes until it reaches 95%. And then the actual move will hold at that point. Users will still be able to continue working on the old mailbox, receive mail, send mail, whatever they want to do. Oh, now before it turns off again. But it's suspended at this 95%. You can do this during normal work hours. So you can move mailboxes in the background during normal office hours. And you can resume the last part of the migration off business hours during the evening or the weekend or whatever, just not to bother users with this pop-up message. New mailbox is activated, old mailbox is soft deleted, depending on the version of Exchange you are using. the mailbox import request, when you want to import PST files into Exchange 2010 or 2013, is using the MRS as well. But instead of a source mailbox, the PST file is used. That's the reason you have to locate PST files on the file share, because the MRS service, one of the MRS servers, needs to be able to get access to the PST file. You can control the MRS using a config file, msexchangemailboxreplication.exe.config file. It's located in the bin directory in Exchange server. Now, it's configured by default, but you have to be careful, because if you say, okay, I can use 15 instances, it can easily overload your server. If you say, nah, I want to do some more throttling, I'll take it to 2 instances, yeah, your mailbox move will take too long. You normally, in a typical environment, 5 instances are used, which will work fine. But you can tweak it a little bit if you want to. Besides the MRS, there's also an MRS proxy. The mailbox replication service is responsible for moving mailboxes on premises. But you can also move mailboxes to Office 365 or to another Active Directory forest with another exchange, an inter-org migration. And there's the MRS proxy. So you have an Exchange 2007 server, but you can also use an Exchange 2003 server environment, implement an Exchange 2010 server in there, and the 2010 server here will communicate with the 2013 cache server here, inter-org, and it will use just plain HTTPS to move all the data over from the old environment. In the next rollup, coming for SP3, Exchange 2010 SP3, there are some improvements for this process, especially when you want to move data from Exchange 2003. This is a pull mechanism. So when you move mailboxes from a previous version to Exchange 2013, it's a pull mechanism. So you have to initiate the request from an Exchange 2013 server. The cache server will pick it up and will move the data from there. So it's a pull mechanism. Now, my administrator mailbox here is approximately 1.5 gigabyte. So before the presentation I started this, and I said, okay, get mailbox, minus identity administrator, then pipe it into the new move request, enter a target database, and set, okay, suspend when ready to complete. It should be completed, so at 95% at this point. So I tried it somewhere, and it was 37%. Let's see where it is now. Okay, so it's 95%. It's now waiting for the migration to complete. When you use the option get move request select and then a number of variables, you can say, okay, MRS, and it will show the MRS server processing the actual request, which in this case was MRS fun MBX cast 2013. Now, I can say get move request, suspend, resume, move request. Get move request statistics. It's relinquished, so now it's closing the source mailbox. It's in the completion process, it's changing all Active Directory values somewhere. Finalization, still 95%, but we're still on track. Cleanup, 99%. And it's completed 100%. now I can start. I'm still missing my dreaded pop-up box at this point, but disconnected. Now let's waiting for the client to pick up the last changes. Maybe I can have a look here. Oh, this was the pop-up I was talking about. And now when you check the connection status, you will still see the URL. It's using HTTPS. But instead of the server name, before the migration, it said server name venmbx01.contoso.com. And this has now changed to this mailbox GUID followed by the primary SMTP address. This can be hard for troubleshooting purposes. When you have a client on the phone calling with some issues, okay, open the profile and what do you see? Okay, this GUID and this SMTP address. The advantage of this is that it's your GUID and it's the only GUID in the entire organization. So if you move mailboxes, even when you move it to another server, you move it to another deck, you move it to another continent, you still keep this GUID. And you are no longer required to restart your Outlook client when you move mailboxes. Even if you move it from, I don't know, Finland to South Africa, there's no need for a restart anymore. There are some other configuration issues here going on. Get mailbox min server on them. I can do a new move request. Now you see the status is queued on all clients, on all requests. But get move. Now, you see all the various options here available. It's already moving the first mailboxes, copying messages. For Michael McDonald, for example, it's loading messages. But for Joe Sixpack and John Doe, it's early on in the process. So it has taken the snapshot, it has read the information, it's creating the folder structure in the new mailbox. And the remaining mailboxes are still in the initial seeding, so creating the snapshot and all the stuff. Now, this will take a couple of minutes to complete, but we leave this running. Now, why is this important? It's not only important for moving mailboxes, for moving mailboxes smoothly from previous versions to Exchange 2013, but also for public folders. When moving public folders, the same MRS is used. The traditional public folders were using their own public folder database, and the public folder database contained the hierarchy, or the folder structure containing the information, and the actual public folder contents. These are two separate things, but they are in the same database. The hierarchy is replicated to all mailbox database or public folder databases in the entire organization. So we have customers running 250 public folder databases, and each database has the same hierarchy. And the hierarchy containing all the information, especially when you have larger organizations, they can have hundreds of thousands of public folders. So the hierarchy itself can grow easily up to 2 or 3 gigabytes. And it's replicated to all servers. And you have the content, and the content is the information stored in the folders themselves. We have public folders and we have system folders. I already explained the system folders, the free busy information, the offline address book used by all the clients. But public folders, old public folders, have their own replication technology. So you have multiple databases, and the information can be replicated across multiple databases. You can select this, set this on a per folder basis. So you can select folder A is replicated to here, folder B replicated to there, folder C is replicated to some other location. It's also a multi-master mechanism. So I can enter information here in Madrid, and this information will be replicated to Amsterdam, to London, to New York, to Sydney. But people in Sydney can put information in their copy of the information or of the public folder, and it will be replicated across the country. So I can see after some time the information here. And it's important to note is that it's a multi-master mechanism. Clients are using or accessing the mailbox server directly to retrieve public folder information. In Exchange 2010, we have the RPC client access service. So MAPI clients access the cache server and then go to the appropriate mailbox server. But for public folder databases, the information is retrieved directly from the mailbox server. So it's not using the RPC client access service. Now, Microsoft has been saying to us, OK, we want to get rid of public folders. And they tried in Exchange 2007. And there were a quadrillion complaints, at least. So they are still around. In Exchange 2010, public folders was still there. Although in the public folders itself, there was not much development going on. The idea in public folders is basically the same as in Exchange 2000, except that the store now is a 64-bit application. But there wasn't much development, some management development, but yeah, that's basically it. And now for Exchange 2013, Microsoft has decided, OK, we are not going to get rid of public folders, but we are going to improve them. So they have created the modern public folders. And the public folders now use mailbox databases. So there are no longer dedicated public folder databases. And all public folder information is stored in mailbox databases. This is fully transparent for Outlook clients. An Outlook client only sees a public folder, and that's it. Whether it is stored on an old traditional environment or Exchange 2013, that's transparent. It just sees public folders with the information. The system folders are discontinued. The hierarchy, so the information, the tree of folders, is stored in the primary hierarchy mailbox. And there's only one writable copy of the hierarchy in the entire organization. So if you have a DAG here in Spain, you have a DAG in New York, you have a DAG in Australia, the primary hierarchy is stored here. And this is my only writable copy. The content, the actual information, is stored in secondary hierarchy mailboxes. But each secondary mailbox contains a read-only copy of the hierarchy. So they are still able to read the public folders. If this primary hierarchy mailbox is not available, clients are not able to write information or store information into public folders. So you have to make sure that your primary hierarchy mailbox is somewhere safeguarded using a DAG or whatever, so it's available all of the time. Also important, it's a single master. So if I store information here in Madrid, I can use a DAG, create additional copies, but the additional copies are just passive copies. All the clients access this active mailbox database. My users in Singapore or in Sydney have to access the information here in Madrid via the when or whatever. So there are quite some complaints, for example, from companies having ships sailing around the world. Up until now, they have their own Exchange server on board with the public folder instant, and the information is replicated there, and everybody is connecting to this replica. This is no longer going to work. So all clients from this particular ship are using the satellite connection to access the server here in Madrid, in the main office. So it's a bit tricky here. So life will certainly change for this particular customer. I've recently finished a migration from 2003 to 2010, where a customer had 26 locations in 26 different countries with 26 different public folder mailboxes. We centralized it to only two locations, one in Rotterdam and one in London. So there's one database here, public folder database, and one there. Now, using this environment, I'm confident to start a discussion about 2013. But I prefer to wait with the actual implementation or the migration to, yeah, whatever, a couple, 6 months from now, to see how it's going to develop, to get some more feedback from other customers, from other migration. So you have to look at your own environment. You have to, yeah, to play with it. You have to test it. You have to think about the implications, what it has to your environment, and then start thinking about moving. But testing, testing, testing over a longer period of time is the best you can do. Public folder deployment best is centralized. Separate public folders into multiple mailboxes. Right now, you can create multiple mailbox databases. But it is now, in Exchange 2013, it's a mailbox. And a mailbox has size limits. And the actual recommendation for a public folder mailbox is 25 gigs. You can stretch it up to 100 gigs. But it's fairly large. There's only one replica available. There is no coexistence with legacy public folders. And this will hurt. It's a big bang migration. So you have all your public folder databases. You clean them up, you get rid of the old stuff, maybe you do some centralizing, and you are moving to Exchange 2013. You will do an inventory and start the migration. The migration is performed by the MRS, just like the mailbox movements. And it will move all the data from the old public folder databases to this modern public folders. It will stop at 95%, and then you have to finalize it. Up until this point, all clients are still connected to the old public folder databases. When you finalize, the old mailbox databases are closed, and users are no longer able to connect to the old public folder database. And the remaining 5% is moved to 2013. But the remaining 5% can be a tremendous amount of data. And it won't take longer as the 5 minutes we saw in the previous example. And in this time frame, your users are not able to use this. So the remaining data is moved to Exchange 2013. All the old information is replicated inside the public folders, inside Active Directory, is moved. Then you say, okay, finalize it. Mail-enabled public folders are restored again on Exchange 2013. They receive SMTP messages, and then you're gone. At that moment, your clients will connect to Exchange 2013 public folders. You can go back if you want, but all information stored after the migration in the new environment is not migrated back. So you can switch back as long as you don't throw away this old data. Now, this is easy if you have an Exchange server running here. Or maybe two. But imagine what happens if you have a public folder server here, and in Amsterdam, and in London, and in New York, and in Sydney, and you want to do this. Think about it. Grab a beer. Grab 10 beers. Think again. Test, test, test. See what happens. Use the Microsoft scripts, use the Microsoft guidance, follow the Microsoft Exchange team blogs to see, okay, what's going on. Follow the forums, see how other people are doing. It looks fairly easy. It is fairly easy. If you have a simple environment, if you have a complex environment, it can be extremely difficult. Also, Exchange 2013 mailboxes are able to access content stored in 2010 public folders. Mailboxes on 2010 are not able to access public folder content in 2013. So it's a one-way mechanism. You can only move your public folder contents when you have moved all your mailboxes to 2013. Copy the hierarchy, statistics, permissions. Microsoft has all kinds of scripts. They are default available in Exchange 2013 to do all the plumbing. Create a public folder mailbox, start a migration request, lock down the folders, and finalize the public folder migration. Tomorrow at 10, there is a session by Siegfried Jagott from Germany about modern public folders. He will talk 75 minutes about modern public folders. That's a very interesting. I have never been a public folder fan, but it's a very interesting session. So if you are here tomorrow morning, your session starts at 10. I think it's also here in 101 about modern public folders. So it's definitely worth checking his session. Now I have my 2007 server again. Oh, this one has stopped working. And I have a public folder database here. Here, it's 400 megabytes, so it's not that big. I already did the preparation, so I ran the scripts to get all the information. They are stored here in this directory. There are some permissions information, there are statistics information, there is a public folder structure information, just to check your environment after the migration. There's also some mapping information. You have numerous public folders, and you have to bring them into public folder databases. So it will check your public folder infrastructure, and it will create a mapping file. Now, when you look at this, I only have a few folders in there. So it says, OK, you only need one public folder mailbox. These scripts are in the Exchange 2013 scripts directory. But the scripts, they work fine on 2010. But if you move them to Exchange 2007, you have to remember that 2007 is running on PowerShell 1, which does not include all options we saw later on. So you need to tweak the script a little bit. But you still get the information. Now, I have my mailbox map here, and I have to create the public folder mailbox first. Now, I did some work in advance here. And it will create the public folder mailbox here, containing all the information. It's not much, but okay. And we go to the next step. Create the move request. Now it will read the mapping file and it will start moving all public folder information. This is the same technique as used in moving mailboxes. So the MRS will pick up this request and will start moving all the public folder information from the old public folder database into the new public folder mailbox. So I can get some information here. And it will say, OK, this is the MRS server, bytes transferred per minute, percent complete, and it will now start moving all the information. I can also set get public folder my migration request. Statistics, format list, and I will see all information available. Most options are not really useful at this point, but sometimes when moving mailboxes or moving public folder stalls, you can get some detailed information here at what step it is actually stalling and try to resolve the issue that's going on. Once it is done, it's at 95%, you say, okay, I'm going to finalize it. You can test it for one or two particular mailboxes. You can finalize it, and then you're done. So it's no real rocket science at this point if you have only one or two servers, but it's going to be more complex if you have multiple servers, of course. But tomorrow at 10, there's a session on the modern public folders by Siegfried Jagott, and he will explain all the previous steps as well. And he will explain them more in detail. The Edge Transport Server has disappeared. And one of the questions I got, now what? Continue to use? No problem. Dedicated mailbox server role in Exchange 2007 and 2010. Used for message hygiene. It can be combined with forefront protection for Exchange. Also a product that was discontinued, unfortunately. There's no Edge Transport Server in Exchange 2013. At this point, it is unknown if we will see a new version. Exchange 2013 has limited anti-malware on board. It has limited anti-spam functionality on board. But the anti-spam is running on the mailbox server, specifically on the hub transport service on the mailbox server. So all spam that enters your organization is automatically sent to the Exchange 2013 mailbox server. So that's not a good idea. And Microsoft wants us to move to Exchange Online Protection, or previously known as Forefront Online Protection for Exchange, or FOPI. You can still use Edge 2010 or Edge 2007 in combination with Exchange 2013 mailbox. That's absolutely no problem, and it's a fully supported solution. If you're in a coexistence scenario, do nothing. It just works. The Edge Transport Server will send the SMTP messages to the 2010 or 2007 Hub Transport Server, and they will be automatically routed to the 2013 Mailbox Server. And this continues to work as long as the down-level hub transport servers are available. If you move to Exchange 2013, just create a new subscription file. Import the subscription file on the mailbox server, run the start Edge synchronization, and now the Edge 2010 or Edge 2007 server is running fine in combination with Exchange 2013. Fully supported, no issues at all. You can continue to use the Edge Transport Server with the anti-spam, maybe with FPE on it, whatever. But it's working fine. And you don't have to use any cloud service. My demo is just some screenshots, because it's not actually worth doing the demo like this. You create a new Edge subscription file, the XML file. You copy it over to the old server. You say new Edge subscription, import the file, create an internet send connector. Make sure that it can resolve from the Edge transport server to the internal servers and vice versa, and start the Edge synchronization. If you send or receive a message, you check the header messages, et voila, you see the Edge server appearing here without any issues. So, fully supported, no big deal, go for it. Now, TMG, I only have 45 seconds left. How about TMG? TMG is no longer available. You can no longer buy it. It continues to run for as long as you leave it up and running. It's supported for at least another 5 years. So you can still use TMG. TMG is fully supported with Exchange 2013. There's even a white paper somewhere out there how to configure TMG for Exchange 2013. Any other solutions? UAG, although maybe a bit overkill, it's an official Microsoft alternative. There are load balancing vendors, Kempen and Five, for example, who offer pre-authentication and reverse proxy functionality. If you are looking for reverse proxy in particular, we have IIS ARR, a module running on IIS performing a reverse proxy. There's a white paper on the link site at this moment, how to configure this. Microsoft has also written a white paper on how to use this in combination with Exchange, but it hasn't published yet. But it will become available pretty soon. So, the summary of my presentation. Exchange 2013, CU1, CU2 is just around the corner, can be used for transitioning from previous Exchange servers without any issues. If you do a 2007, you may run into some configuration issues, additional pop-ups, etc. but you can overcome this. Outlook Anywhere is the new protocol. Public folders is new, but remember, it can be quite complex if you have a large environment. Test thoroughly. Edge Transport Server, TMG, fully supported, no problem at this stage. I have no idea what happens in the next version of Exchange, at least 3 years from now, but for now, you're safe using Edge Transport Server, TMG. That's it. This was my name. You can find my website, my email address. You can always send me questions, no problem at all. I have minus 2 minutes left, so we have to call it a day. If you have any question, please come up front here, or otherwise, see you at some other session or ask the expert.